Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On the program today, military emergency help to the provinces, but is it enough?
Sending men and women in uniform to help in Ontario is a serious step. We're doing this because the situation requires it.
Medical relief staff from Newfoundland and Labrador arrived in Ontario today. Emergency military units are not far behind. The military also on their way to help out the very tough situation in Nova Scotia and possibly soon to northern Alberta. Is it enough to stop the third wave ravaging much of this country? We'll ask Dr. Allison Fury. She just landed in Ontario from St. John's. She's going to help out. What will she do? We'll find out. Then Ontario's sick leave pitch, but is the federal government refusing to play ball?
The people of Ontario deserve more money. First of all, $12.50 an hour is not going to be sufficient for people to stay home.
The province offers to double the current federal pandemic sick pay program. The Prime Minister doesn't seem interested. Is there a compromise on paid sick leave? Ontario's Labour Minister, Monty McNaughton, will join us on that. So will the federal Labour Minister, Philomena Tassi. Plus, we're going to find out why Minister Tassi has just tabled back-to-work legislation to end the Montreal port strike. Too soon to do that. We'll get the details. And then, a vaccine-related death.
It's with a lot of sadness that I wish to announce to you that we just had our first patient who has died of a thrombosis, a cerebral thrombosis following vaccination.
A 54-year-old woman in Quebec has died of that rare blood clot from the vaccine AstraZeneca. Health officials say she received the AstraZeneca shot and then this may have been the cause. The province is not going to change its vaccination strategy. They say the benefits still outweigh the risk, but we'll get more details on this latest tragic event in this program and get some context on that for you. So lots to come. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. We begin today with the latest on what I just was talking about, the blood clot death in Quebec that is related, according to the premier, to the vaccine AstraZeneca. Again, there were warnings about this rare occurrence happening, but this is the first death in Canada that we know of due to a vaccine. We're going to bring in CTV's Vanessa Lee with the details. Vanessa, I know the premier and health officials talked about it today. What do we know about this woman and about this case?
Evan, we know that the woman was 54 years old and she was healthy and she died after getting the AstraZeneca vaccine. What was not released at this point is exactly when she got the vaccine and when she died. So the span between the two. At that news conference today, it is clear that public health officials are sad and they say that this is very upsetting news. But having said that, they say that they are aware of the risks, that the vaccine does come with risks. Statistically, severe complications will arise in 1 in 100,000 people. But having said that, the benefits far outweigh the risks. They talk about all of the lives that have been saved, all of the people that have been kept out of hospital. Now, if you look at Quebec, more than 400,000 people have received the AstraZeneca vaccine. And so far, there are three other reports of blood clots. One is receiving treatment, and the other two, it's not yet confirmed if the thrombosis is linked to the vaccine, Evan.
All right, Vanessa, I should remind people, Prime Minister Trudeau and his wife, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau, both received the AstraZeneca. It is the same vaccine been used throughout the United Kingdom. My wife and I also just got the AstraZeneca. So as you say, Vanessa, millions of people have taken that as well. But what a tragic event. Thanks so much for that latest report. But clearly that's something that will be talked about and we'll pick up questions on that later in the program. We will ask that to Dr. Allison Fury, who will join us. Meanwhile, the debate about protecting essential workers with paid sick leave has dominated the debate in Ontario. And today, after years of dismissing the idea that that province needs a paid sick leave program. In fact, remember, they canceled the existing one that in 2018 when they were first elected. The Ontario government has now come forward with their new proposal. They are pitching that the Canada Recovery Sickness Benefit be doubled from $500 to $1,000 a week, with the province paying the difference. The federal program, of course, currently pays people $450 a week after tax for 4 weeks. So now it'd be close to $1,000. But the Prime Minister punted the idea back to the province. Check this out.
One of the most efficient ways of doing that is obviously to work through employers, as we have through federally regulated workplaces. And I know the Deputy Prime Minister is working directly with the province of Ontario to ensure that the right supports get there for people as quickly as possible. As we've said, we are there to help Canadians. We have people's backs. We need to work together, and provinces need to look at the way to deliver sick leave through directly through employers, which the federal government can't do.
All right. So he's saying, you know, go directly to the employers, which is provincial jurisdiction. So will Ontario have to go back to the drawing board, or do they have a strong enough pitch to actually eventually get federal support? Let's find out. Joining me now is Ontario's Labour Minister, Monty McNaughton. Good to have you, Minister, back on the program. Well, the proposal from Ontario has come out to, you know, top up the federal government's money by $500. Already the Prime Minister said no. He's poured cold water on it, saying one of the most efficient ways of doing what you want to do is to, quote, obviously work through employers as we've done through federally regulated workplace. So he wants your province instead to use your own jurisdiction and do this through employers. What is your response to the federal government's essential rejection of this?
Well, look, what we're asking the federal government to do is to simply double their program. They're sending $500 a week, up to 4 weeks, to workers in Ontario who are sick from COVID. That's below minimum wage. What we've offered to the federal government, since they have the infrastructure in place, the program in place, is to simply double that to $1,000 per week. Ontario will pay 100% of the cost of doubling that program. I was actually optimistic today. I heard Prime Minister Trudeau at lunchtime today, and he left the door open, and we're ready to get to work. I know there's been some discussions this afternoon, but we think this is the most sensible way to get $1,000 per week to sick workers in Ontario.
Yeah, that's not what they say, though. Like, again, here's Chrystia Freeland. When Ontario was ready to mandate sick leave in provincially regulated businesses, as we have done for federally regulated business, we'll be there to help. In fact, the wage subsidy was designed and is set up to provide employees with financial support to pay the wages of workers who are on sick leave. The Canada Sick Recovery Sickness Benefit is there to help Canadians who would otherwise fall through the cracks, either because they do not have the regular employer or because their province is not yet mandated. Sir, clearly the federal government saying, back to you. I know, I understand small businesses is something that the Premier Doug Ford doesn't want to do and put this on the backs of small businesses. Clearly the federal government is saying, your jurisdiction, you mandate it, your government should mandate it for provincially regulated businesses. What's the response to that?
Well, look, I will point out that the Prime Minister came out 2 hours later with clearly a different message. And I can tell you there's been phone calls between Queen's Park in Ottawa today. This makes sense for workers, Evelyn. Evan, $1,000 per week, that would raise it from below minimum wage under the current program to $25 an hour. And that would be for 4 weeks. It would really put a lot of money in people's pockets to get through this. And, you know, we've advocated for a better program federally. We're willing to pay 100% of the cost of doubling this. There's no reason, right, since the federal program is already in place, that we couldn't quickly get paychecks out to workers.
But, I'm just trying to figure this out, because Premier Doug Ford last week said the sick leave plan will be one of the best new plans in North America. It will be Ontario's plan. Now the plan is to top up the federal government's plan that the premier has said is riddled with gaps. Is getting the federal government to run a sick pay plan on the behalf of the province, which is your jurisdiction, is that the best plan in North America?
Look, $1,000 per week is a very strong plan for workers in Ontario. It's identified as the biggest gap in the current system. When workers are being paid below minimum wage, that's not encouraging workers to stay home. And we want to ensure that they're not choosing between their job and their health. But we've even gone further. We want to make this retroactive for 60 days. So workers who have had a time off, who have only received $500 through the federal government, we'll double that. This makes sense. The infrastructure is in place. And just one other thing why it's really important that we do this through the federal channels is because we want to ensure that every worker in Ontario is covered, including gig workers like Uber drivers, for example, and self-employed people.
So,
and federal government has that in place now. Let's just double it. It's simple.
But part of the reason your government's been on the hot seat is ignoring the Ontario Science Advisory Table advice. And they have recommended a paid sick leave program that will be implemented to reduce the spread of COVID, as you know. And they want it, and I'm quoting them, to be easily accessible and immediately paid and available for essential workers who are feeling ill or need time to get tested or vaccinated. The federal program, though, doesn't do this. Workers have to apply for leave, so the pay is not immediate. Workers have to miss 50% of their work week in order to qualify for the benefit. Why, again, in the third wave ravaging your province, why ignore the science table advice on this and not, if you did it through the workplaces, it would be immediate. They wouldn't have to apply. They wouldn't have to meet all those criteria.
Well, look, I'll say there was a Ontario Liberal piece of legislation this week that called for paid sick days, but it clearly put all of the burden, all of the costs on small businesses. We need small businesses to have a chance to survive, to open back up after this third wave. We need workers to have a job to go back to. This is a solution, Evan, that could be fixed today. Simply double that program. Right. Ontario will pay it. It's literally hundreds of millions of dollars that Ontario would be contributing.
The flip side, because you know those businesses, and I appreciate that, they're already getting the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy, those same small businesses. But your government could have opted to reinstate the paid sick leave programs that you canceled in 2018 that were already in the province. The infrastructure's there, the system was there. Why not just go back to at least what your government canceled 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and instead of asking the federal government to run something that's not their jurisdiction?
Evan, those paid sick days are squarely on the backs of small businesses. We're not going to do that. We're going to help small businesses get through this. But we're talking about $1,000 per week for 4 weeks through the federal program where we pay 100% to double that. It makes sense. The program is already in place. Why duplicate the infrastructure to deliver this?
It's a fair point. I very rarely see a province wanting to give away jurisdiction. So if you want to give the federal government administrative jurisdiction on that, and just with matching funds, that's literally what they're going to propose for without the administration, for child care, long-term care. Are you worried that you're handing over provincial jurisdiction to the federal government? Isn't it then hard to reassert your own jurisdiction when you're giving it away to the feds?
Not at all. I mean, we're in the third wave of a global pandemic. We have to keep working together. And I can tell you, I've worked closely with the federal government, in particular Minister Qualtrough, to ensure that these payments are directly deposited into workers' right. bank accounts within 3 to 5 days. You can apply now more than once. And because of our advocacy, they actually grew the program to 4 weeks. So this is just the one last gap that needs to be filled. Let's double this to $1,000, make it retroactive for 60 days, and we'll get through COVID-19.
Can you just last thing, Minister McNaughton, I know the Ontario has requested the help of the military and the Red Cross. Can you tell us at this moment where the military, what hospitals they will be going to, how many will be deployed, any details on that deployment?
I know the Minister of Health and Solicitor General is working on this and have certainly wanting this help. So again, this is one area where the federal government and Ontario is working together. And I think we need to do the same for sick days. It's the fastest, simplest, most efficient way to get money into workers' pockets.
All right, I got to leave it there. Minister McDonough, always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan.
So you just heard from the Ontario Labour Minister, McNaughton. Now let's turn to the Federal Labour Minister, Philomena Tassi. She's obviously about Ontario's proposed top-up of the federal sick leave program, as well as I want to get into the back-to-work legislation that you tabled in terms of the strike in the Port of Montreal. But, Minister, good to have you on the program. Why is or will the federal government take up Ontario's proposal to boost the federal sick leave pay program? It's already there. What is there to lose if Ontario is going to pay the $500 difference?
Well, I think, Evan, first and foremost, it's great that the Ontario government is stepping forward in order to make this commitment to workers. I mean, an acknowledgement that we want to support workers. We are definitely in agreement that when workers are sick, we don't want them to go to work, particularly in this pandemic, but to provide that support. So that's really important. And I think the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance was very clear. I mean, you've quoted her earlier on the show to say that, listen, if Ontario is going to mandate sick leave provincially, that, you know, we're going to be there to support them.
So what does that mean, though? The point is only two provinces have sick leave. Now you've got a province that has basically done a 180 on it. They want to offer $500 on top of the existing program. That's real money. You could do it quickly. Minister McNaughton just said that he's negotiating with the federal government. I'm just trying to get a straight answer out of your government on this. Will your government consider accepting this offer and administering the sick leave if Ontario kicks in the extra $500?
I think that the response to that is to say, look, we have been working collaboratively. We're going to continue to do that to support workers. During this pandemic, we have, you know, invested in areas that we never normally would be in our jurisdiction, are not in our jurisdiction. So if you look at the sick leave that is currently there, the sick benefit that's paid, you know, we are paying that to workers across this country, including those that are provincially regulated, including gig workers and others that normally would not have this benefit. So I think it's really important to recognize that we have, in this pandemic, offered unprecedented supports and entered into jurisdictions that normally we would not. And that's all in the interest
of
Canadians. Sorry?
Okay, but here's Ontario. I mean, this is just so weird. You've got a province wanting the federal government to get into their jurisdiction, a federal government not like, folks, am I watching a movie in reverse? So you're right that the federal program does cover people like gig workers who are very vulnerable. That's Ontario's point. They're saying, good, we've got a program that's working. The federal government's clearly into this. You've supposed there is a pandemic. If you're going to politic on this answer, essential workers might be endangered. Why not just take the money, get the program, give people more than minimum wage? They'll get $1,000 before tax for 4 weeks. It may help right now. Is this the time to be punting it back and forth?
Well, I think that the measures that we have taken have been response to COVID. And so when you look at, for me as Minister of Labor, I'm responsible and oversee the federally regulated workers. That represents 6% of workers across this country. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. And there's no question during COVID, we've gone above and beyond. I mean, 8 out of every $10 that's being spent on COVID is actually federal dollars. And so everyone would acknowledge that we are in an area that, you know, we are in jurisdiction, which normally we would not be supporting. But I would say this, look, great that the province is coming forward and making a commitment that they want to support financial support. It would be great to see them, as you have said, mandate a sick leave, make the commitment to do that, commit the funds to do that. And then, of course, we are going to work collaboratively
okay,
with them.
But
we want to support workers across the country.
I know, but a lot of small businesses can't afford that right now because of the pandemic. And that's why they don't even have it in BC. They got an NDP government there. They don't have paid sick leave. It does sound like now that the Canada Recovery Sickness Benefit, it sounds like you're saying that's temporary, that after the pandemic, the federal government's going to get out of that jurisdiction. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is the Canada Recovery Sickness Benefit was implemented because of COVID. It was implemented because we knew that provinces and territories needed the support and did not have the funds in order to ensure that workers that are sick stay home. And that's the end goal here. To keep Canadians healthy and safe, we have to make sure that workers aren't going to get sick.
But that's interesting, Minister. So it does sound like you're saying when this crisis is over, that benefit is over. It's back to the provinces. So this is a temporary support. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is all the supports, Evan, that we have put in place, the caregiver credit, the CEWS, all these supports are supports that we have implemented because of COVID. And if, in fact, as we move forward, we recognize that supports need to continue and are important, we're always going to be there for Canadians. We're going to support them. But I will be very clear that the measures that we have implemented have been response to the pandemic.
Okay. Let me get to the port. Man, I could talk about that for a while, though. You introduced back-to-work legislation for dock workers on the strike in the port of Montreal, one of Canada's busiest ports. It's crucial to the supply chain. I all understand that. But it's only been a day since they went on strike. By introducing this legislation, the union, the workers see that you are disincentivizing the company that runs the port to negotiate in good faith and undermining any sense of a free and fair collective bargaining process. Why intervene so soon and, in the workers' view, undermine their position?
Well, thanks for this question. I just want to give some context to the background. So, Evan, the parties have been negotiating for 2.5 years. And we as the federal government have had our mediators at the table. There's been over 100 bargaining sessions where the federal mediator has sat there with the parties. And I know that the parties are grateful with respect to that federal support. In February, I took the additional step of putting two senior level mediators in and... Sorry, can you still see me, Evan? Are you okay?
I got you, Minister. I'm okay, hearing you, but I got to tell you, if you give me a chance to jump in, it hasn't worked, though. I mean, this has spiraled out of control after 2 years, which, many people are blaming the federal government's failure to actually get a mediation here. But again, I got to ask you, aren't you undermining the right of workers to have free and fair collective bargaining by putting your thumb on the scale for the company that owns the port?
So this is what I would say. That's a very fair question. And I will be very clear that this is the least favored option. But we have provided support to the parties. You're talking about a day. We've been there for 2.5 years. In February, I made the move of appointing two more senior level mediators who are at the table. So this bargaining has gone on for 2.5 years with federal government support, and we have been very clear. We have said to the parties, we want you to make that deal at the table. Right. We know that the deals that are negotiated at the table are deals that both parties are happy with and can walk away. And so we've been providing the support for 2.5 years.
Do have a couple seconds, but Mr. Tassi, the union is saying they've made an exception for essential, like medical equipment, medicines, anything that's coming in to that port that is essential and can save lives. There's a cutout. There's an exemption that will be offloaded. If that's the case, why not let them collectively bargain?
So for this, what I would say to that in response, Evan, very hard to implement. Right now, we have ships that are lined up because of the work stoppage that have things on them like important medical supplies, medical equipment. We've got fertilizer for farmers. I can tell you that it's not only the economic impact, we're talking about the health and safety of Canadians. We have materials on those ships that need to get through because of the COVID pandemic and because the impact on supply chains. So listen, of course, we want the parties to reach an agreement at the table. The legislation that we are putting forward provides another 21 days for the parties to continue to negotiate with the mediator. And they have say in terms of who the mediator is. They will provide a list. Right. I will take a look at that list. So listen, of course, we want to support the parties and we encourage them to continue to negotiate and get a deal done at the table.
All right, Mr. Tassi, I really appreciate your time tonight, and I've taken up probably more of it than you bargained for. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Evan. Take care.
All right, coming up, helping the hardest hit. Check this out.
This is an example of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians stepping up to answer the call.
Dr. Allison Fury has just arrived in Ontario from Newfoundland and Labrador, along with a group of incredibly dedicated medical workers to help Ontario. She joins us next to find out what she expects to actually do. Welcome back. Help has arrived. In Ontario, 9 Newfoundland and Labrador healthcare workers have arrived in the province. They're going to help pull Ontario through the third wave. Their crisis in ICUs. This comes while Ontario has put out a call for international aid, asks to the U.S. and the Philippines and across Canada. In the meantime, the Newfoundland Labrador team will get to work at Toronto's University Health Network. What exactly will they be doing? By the way, the military is coming not only to Newfoundland, to Ontario, but also to Nova Scotia. Let's bring in Dr. Allison Fury. She's a doctor from Newfoundland and Labrador who just landed along with eight other colleagues. We should say she's also married to another doctor who happens also to be the premier of Newfoundland and Labrador. Dr. Fury, great to have you here. And I'm sure the people of Ontario are happy to choose the better family member in your family. But on a serious note, your dedication to volunteer for this is really remarkable, and you know, sort of hats off for that. What do you and the other colleagues that you're with expect to be doing in Ontario?
Well, we've come to Ontario to help, obviously, with the COVID-19 crisis. We have a dedicated team from our ICUs and critical care nurses that will be helping out in critical care, and I'll be working on one of the COVID wards at Toronto Western.
Do you know how long you'll be in Ontario?
There's some varying times, anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, actually.
2 weeks to a month. And do you have to, is there any isolation you have to do now, or can you just get at her and just get into the hospital system?
Coming from Newfoundland to Toronto, we will be in the hospital tomorrow, and we start work on the ground on Thursday morning, 8 o'clock.
And on Thursday morning. And I know there's been some kind of recon. Are you expecting that the military will also be there as well? Because they're going to come and they're going to be working with you as well.
That is my understanding. I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly the logistics with the military, but I do understand the military is sending teams as well.
I got to ask you, because you are an emergency room physician, about the death of this 54-year-old woman in Quebec after she took the AstraZeneca vaccine from this thrombosis, this rare blood clot. Obviously, this could contribute to vaccine hesitancy at a critical time. What's your sense of this in terms of risk-benefit, and maybe a message to people who might be now very concerned about it? Millions of people, including the Prime Minister, his wife, I took the AstraZeneca, millions of people have.
Yeah. Everything that we do has a risk. And the risk maintains with the vaccines is still very low. And my advice to anyone would be to take the vaccine that is first available for you.
AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, any of them?
Any of them. Yes.
All right. Well, you've just landed. I know you've got to sort a lot out. You might be here for a month in Ontario. I just want to say, Dr. Fury, you know, the kind of thing you're doing really is an example of the best of who Canadians are. And you and your colleagues, thank you for doing this kind of volunteer work. It is remarkable. I know it's going to be a tough month ahead, but thank you so much. I think on behalf of all Canadians, thank you.
Well, thank you, Evan. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Dr. Allison Fury. And again, the remarkable work they're all doing, all the frontline workers. But what an example to leave your home and to go into a hot zone like that. It says a lot about Newfoundland and Labrador, says a lot about Dr. Fury and her colleagues, and says a lot about this country. I want to dig further into the issues here. While the military is coming to Nova Scotia and Ontario, maybe even to northern Alberta, Fort Mac and that area is really suffering. That's to stop the crisis in the short term. The long term, though, things like paid sick leave are needed in almost every province. Only Quebec and PEI have a paid sick leave program currently. Ontario, as you know, has pitched that the Canada Recovery Sickness Benefit be doubled from $500 to $1,000 a week, the province paying the difference. The federal government don't seem that interested. I just talked to the Minister of Labour. She said, look, this was basically a temporary program. We don't want to make this thing permanent. Well, we'll find out if it becomes that. The press gallery is here to dig in. Bob Fife is the Globe and Mail's Ottawa bureau chief. Emily Nicolas is a columnist with Le Devoir and the Gazette. Bob and Emily, always a pleasure. Bob, the raging debate about protecting essential workers and paid sick leave. What do you make of the federal government's response to Ontario and Ontario's offer to top up the program?
Well, Ontario is in a difficult situation because it's under a lot of pressure. Given the outbreak of COVID amongst gig workers and low-wage factory workers, People aren't able to are going into work because they're sick, because if they don't show up, they don't get paid. But Ontario doesn't want to put it be in a situation where it has to bring in legislated sick leave benefits, because I think they understand that once you bring such a thing in, it's very expensive and hard to eliminate. So I think they're trying to go to have the federal government administer it, and, you know, double the rate that people would get, which is pretty generous. The problem with from the federal government's perspective is that they don't trust their computer system. We all remember the Phoenix fiasco on the payment for pay for federal civil servants, and they're afraid that if they try to bring in a kind of a sick leave benefit that would work individually for provinces, it's going to end up being a complete mess and not going to help people in the immediate term, which is the whole point of this. British Columbia is going to actually go ahead and do their own sick leave benefit. They had talked to the federal government. They thought it was going to be in the federal budget. It wasn't in. So they've announced today that they're going to go ahead and bring their own sick leave benefit in. They don't like the Ontario approach.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's this is provincial jurisdiction, Emily. I know Quebec already has one. Does it cover gig workers, for example? And how is this resonating in Quebec as Ontario is pitching that the federal government kind of take this thing over?
It depends what kind of contract you have. But if you're a contract worker, technically you're under the labor code. However, I think it's really interesting we're having this conversation, and I think Bob said it right when he said that, you know, basically Ontario doesn't want to give labor rights. And I think that's basically the bottom of it, is that people want it to be exceptional because of the pandemic. But we've seen that, for example, in countries like New Zealand, when they have much more actually sick leave days than we have here in Quebec, it's actually really helping as a program to curb the pandemic. Also in Europe, they have a lot more sick days than we have. So really, we're in a case of exception in North America in terms of not having those kinds of rights. We also have fewer vacations than pretty much anywhere else. So basically, we live in a civilization where labor rights are, you know, considered a luxury. And so that's basically the framework behind this conversation that we're having in terms of, you know, people being paid directly by their employers when they get sick, but being somehow of a luxury. And that's obviously impacting how we're doing this. If workers are living paycheck to paycheck, they have to wait for a check from the federal government that's going to come afterwards and not, you know, in their direct pay. That in itself can be a barrier to access to the program. And so we're really toying with people's lives right now. And there's a reason why the conservative government abolished this right when they came to power. Really what's at play here is an ideological fight. It has nothing to do with, you know, science and pandemic relief.
Well, we'll find out if the federal government actually sticks with their program after the pandemic. The signals are pretty strong that they don't want this to be permanent, as you both said. Okay, Bob and Emily, stick around. I got to take a break. I know you're going to come back. We're going to talk about the federal government. Are they encroaching on your social media? Are they going to start regulating TikTok and YouTube? But in the meantime, we're also going to be joined by Minister Gould to talk about what is Canada going to do to help the situation in India? And is it missing one of the major things it should be doing? We'll find out next. Stay with us. This is a live look from Edmonton at this hour. Alberta has just announced they've added 1,539 new cases of COVID. Seven more people have tragically died. The province's top doctor, Dina Hinshaw, who you're looking at here, says variants now make up 60%, more than 60% of all active cases. We're streaming that live on ctvnews.ca if you want to check out that. Meantime, India is in a terrible situation, and Canada has announced it will send $10 million through the Red Cross to help India fight its crushing COVID-19 surge. That money will be administered through the Indian Red Cross to fund ambulance services and buy PPE, personal protective equipment. But Canada is still slated to receive 1.5 million vaccine doses from the Serum Institute in India by the end of June. Should Canada take those vaccines? And why is Canada still not voting with over 97 other countries at the WTO, including India, who want to suspend patents of the vaccines and allow low and middle income countries to produce a generic supply? Let's bring in the Minister of International Development, Karina Gould. Minister, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Should Canada, first of all, can you tell us what else Canada will be doing to help India?
Well, so first of all, as you mentioned, we announced today $10 million to the Indian Red Cross, and you did a great job of explaining it's going to support the ambulance service as well as PPE, but it will also help the Indian Red Cross build out isolation centers and do some really important public awareness campaigns. And so this is really important immediate support that the Government of Canada is providing. And I would like to encourage Canadians who want to make a contribution. The Red Cross has an appeal for India, and if you'd like to make a donation, you can go onto their website to do that. We are currently in conversations with the Government of India. Minister Garneau had a conversation with his counterpart this morning, and we're engaging on a very regular basis with the Indian High Commission here in Canada to determine what else we can offer that is needed in India. And so we're assessing what we have in our national stockpile that can be matched on the ground.
Minister, Canada is still set to get out 1.5 million doses from the Serum Institute by the end of June. Given the situation there, given that we have 20 million other AstraZeneca doses we're expecting to come in June, is it ethical for Canada to take those doses from India, or should we leave them there?
Well, as you know, India does have export restrictions on vaccines right now. So I know those conversations are ongoing. Of course, we know that, vaccines are one important tool in fighting the pandemic, but it's also really important to have other public health measures. I mean, just as we see here in Canada or in other countries like Chile, where they have a very high vaccination rate, but they also have outbreaks, is that you have to really apply the full suite of measures, including vaccination, to get outbreaks under control.
No, I get that. But should Canada just say no? Given your crisis, look, I know lots of things work. Vaccines are the miracle. They're the way out of this. Is Canada going to give up that 1.5 million doses of AstraZeneca and just say, we don't want it, you take it?
Well, I know that we have a contract with the Serum Institute of India, and they're also providing vaccines domestically. But those are conversations that are ongoing, and certainly, you know, as Canada receives vaccines here in our own country, we have committed that any excess doses we would be donating through COVAX.
Minister, you and I have spoken about this before. Last year, India and 97 countries at the World Trade Organization were asking for a vote to drop, temporarily suspend the intellectual property patents on these vaccines so countries like India and South Africa can actually start producing generics. Canada did not vote with that group to do it. You said, well, we're not voting against it, but it's now been delayed. You know, November, December, January, February, March, April, we're heading into May. Canada still hasn't voted for this. Will we do that? And now that you're seeing the third wave hit these countries and people are dying, was it a mistake not to actually push to try to get vaccines domestically produced in low and middle income countries like India?
Well, I mean, as you know, India is one of the largest vaccine producers in the world. And in fact, you know, the Serum Institute and other manufacturers in India have contracted with AstraZeneca, Novavax, and another of other vaccine producers to produce vaccines. And they are doing that by, you know, the hundreds of millions have contracted COVAX. Depends mostly on the Serum Institute for their vaccines. But with regards to the TRIPS waiver, we've tried to be very constructive in the conversation. The WTO, as you know, operates on a consensus basis. And to try and push forward in this discussion, Minister Ng, the Minister of International Trade, has been working with the new Director General of the WTO on her proposed third way to try and address, you know, the logjam at the WTO, because ultimately we want to see vaccines being produced. We want to see them being manufactured right around the world to get them to as many people as possible.
But why is it a logjam? I know I don't have time, but it's not that. you know, I know India produces, but, you know, we've got help for Pakistan. There's going to be Indonesia. There's a lot of countries that don't produce that are going to need it, and time will matter. We learned from the AIDS crisis that generic drugs help. What's the logjam? The logjam is that Canada is not voting along with 97 other countries to do this.
Well, so again, I mean, the WTO works on consensus, so it's not really a vote. It's discussions that are happening, and we've been trying to find a constructive solution, because even if there's one country that's opposed, we can't move forward with it. So that's why we're supporting this third way, which is looking to work with manufacturers to license out, IP and recipes, and to really expand manufacturing. And so Canada is very much engaged in this conversation and wanting to see, actual results on the ground. So, you know, we're not opposed to it, but we are very much trying to find a compromise solution that's actually going to deliver vaccines.
Okay. It's critical timing. But Minister Gould, I really appreciate you joining us always to talk about this. Thank you, Karina Gould, for joining us. I got to take a break, though. Coming up, though, this is a really interesting thing. Will an amendment to the Broadcasting Act put your freedom of speech in jeopardy? Will TikTok and YouTube, the stuff you upload, be regulated by the CRTC? University of Ottawa professor Michael Guy says yes, and he's on the press gallery next. Stay with us. Will your TikTok and YouTube be regulated by the federal government and the CRTC? Well, the press gallery's next special guest says yes. A new amendment to something called Bill C-10 puts freedom of expression in jeopardy, he argues. The amendment to this bill will allow the federal government to regulate video content on TikTok and YouTube. A spokesperson, though, for the Heritage Minister, Stephen Guilbeault, said to CTV News, no, the bill has safeguards in place. Don't worry about it. His office directed PowerPlay to a section of the act saying a person who uses a social media service to upload programs for transmission over the internet and reception by other users of the service, and who is not the provider of the service or the provider's affiliate or the agent of the mandatory, either of them, does not, by the fact of that use, carry on a broadcasting undertaking for the purpose of the act. Meaning, no, don't worry about it. Everyone relax. We invited the minister on to talk about it. He wasn't available. But guess who is? The press gallery, Bob Fyfe from the Globe and Mail, Emily Nicola from Le Devoir and the Gazette, and Michael Geist, a law professor of the University of Ottawa, who writes about this. Michael Geist, are you reassured? Don't worry. The federal government is not going to regulate TikTok and YouTube and Instagram under the CRTC. What's your take?
No, there's no reason for assurance. The government, if we're honest about it, has been pretty deceptive about what's in the bill and not in the bill, almost literally from the moment it was introduced. But this really, I think, in many ways, is the high point of that. They put in two exceptions. One was to say that an individual user who posts something to a TikTok or a YouTube isn't a broadcaster. And secondly, that the content that they post isn't going to be regulated by the CRTC. It's true that they've kept the first exception, but last Friday, towards the end of the day, in committee, they removed the second exception. And the effect of that is to ensure that the content that we all post on those kinds of sites suddenly now gets treated as a program, much like any other program by a broadcaster, and it's subject to regulation by the CRTC.
Bob, weigh in on this. They say they want to regulate the web giants. Michael Geist arguing it's overreach. They're regulating everybody.
Yeah, this is a very complicated subject, and one which we haven't really had an awful lot of debate on it in Canada. We've had some parliamentary hearings, but we need, a much larger discussion about not only the how we regulate the large social media platforms, but the whole issue of freedom of speech, but also how do we deal with hate speech? And we know that on social media, I've seen, you know, you're Jewish, Evan. I've seen some very vicious attacks against you. And it's happened against other minorities. So we do have to have, it seems to me, we have to figure out a way to deal with how we regulate internet companies. But how do we deal with the increasing use of these platforms for people to spew white supremacism, anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim stuff, all the use of or dealing also with child pornography? And I don't think we've had that debate, and I don't have the answer to it, but I just think it's a very serious issue and one that cannot be easily dismissed.
Emily, I got a couple of minutes here. So Emily, and then I want Michael Geist to respond. Emily.
Yeah, I feel like the government needs to be doing a lot more communication on what exactly it's its plan, because it seems that there is this bill is part of multiple bills that might also come. One on online hate. Another one as well on copyrights. And so, and then there's this piece on broadcasting, and it's not clear how they fit with one another. And so that's why in this bill, we're saying that they might regulate, but it's not saying what their intentions are in terms of regulation that would be coming in other policies that we are not seeing yet. And so we don't know exactly what the plan is. One thing for sure, though, is that if people have an understanding of the internet being free now, that's a lie. It's not because the government is coming in that there was right. freedom of expression before. Now there isn't. Now what you have is that you have YouTube legislating over your content. You have TikTok legislating over your content. You have Twitter doing it. So it's a matter of, do you only want the private companies doing it, or you also want the government doing it as well? And that's the conversation that we're having.
Michael Geist, I got about 30 seconds. Your last word on that, and how do they find that balance?
Well, I think you start by recognizing we've got a charter of rights and freedoms. And so we don't regulate what is just basic core speech, which is what this Bill C-10 from Guilbeault is seeking to do. I mean, Bob's right. Of course, we need to be dealing with online harms. But that's a separate piece of legislation that's coming. It's got all sorts of other kinds of safeguards that hopefully will be built in. And we're talking about criminalized speech. That's not this. This is the speech of everyday millions of Canadians suddenly now being treated as regulated by the CRTC.
All right. Okay, Michael Geist, Bob Fyfe, and Emily Nicola, great to have the three of you. Man, we need more speech on that this topic, and we will cover it more. But that is your Power Play Day in Politics. Thanks for watching. We'll be back in 23 short hours. I hope it's safe to hug your loved ones, because if it is, do it.